Talk given Saturday, 29th October 1977.
I think we can be all agreed that the greatest shortage in the world today is the shortage of good human beings. This is not a phenomenon which is just characteristic of our own present era. It has been the case in greater or lesser measure throughout the millennia. But perhaps today more than ever, in certain respects and in various fields, this shortage has become very serious indeed. And unless something happens, there is unquestionably the danger of serious catastrophe. Catastrophe compared with which the wars that we have seen in our own lifetime will not loom so seriously, bad as they were. And this catastrophe is characterized by the complete flouting of law and order. Anarchy and evil are a triumphant business today. And it is extremely difficult to combat, to deal with the sort of thing that goes on in the world. It is not the actual suffering, the actual murder or anything, but the ease with which law and order in various societies cannot be maintained. When that happens, the whole human race is bound to suffer some unimaginable calamity. Naturally, one wonders what can be done about it. There is no answer as far as that question is concerned on the various planes on which society lives. The political, the economic, the sociological, the educational, and so forth. There is no answer, no plan, no brain activity, no looking back into the past of human history to find an answer. When a disease assumes the proportions that this world disease has now assumed, the answer can come only out of a transcendent depth. Any answer that we give on the plane of the trouble itself political or economic or whatever it is merely a counteraction. It is a palliative, a stopgap. We all know the phrase, the Cold War. This precarious peace, as we call it, between two hot wars. Counteraction doesn't solve any problem. If it solves apparently and outwardly the shape of the problem that afflicts us, it only paves the way for other problems which spring up instead. It's an extraordinary fact. Not by counteraction, not by palliatives. Because counteraction means conflict and strife. Palliatives mean a temporary retreat from being able to face, to clearly understand and heal the disease. Healing comes from a transcendent depth only, a whole making. And a transcendent depth is something which we, in the ordinary way, cannot see. It is something which cannot be foreseen. It is of the nature of the unexpected, of the nature of the new, the altogether new. And this altogether new can never be known by the human brain. This altogether new, the unknown, emerges out of the innermost depth of human consciousness. And this is the thing no one can tackle, no one can see. Because that which lies hidden in the innermost depth of consciousness is something which belongs to a dimension of mind and consciousness which altogether transcends what we know, what we have already achieved, and so forth. You see, the element which we may call death lies in our psychophysical being. It's restricted to our psychophysical being, and it cannot escape the bounds of the known. It cannot escape the limitations set upon us by the ambivalence of our own psyche, its dualistic nature. As and when transcendence is able to enter freely into us, then that brings with it the utterly new. It brings with us the power, it brings unto us the power of new creation. Not just a reshuffling of the old situation. As I have often said, changing the furniture about in the room, same old furniture. It's never that. It brings in the utterly new. And this utterly new is the thing that is the carrier of a new life. A new life which emerges because all that belongs to the old, to that which we are at present, undergoes a complete transformation, a complete turning away from the old. Repentance in the true and the great meaning of the word repentance, a metanoia. In Buddhism we have this wonderful phrase, in Mahayana for instance, this turning about in the innermost seat of consciousness. The Greeks called it metanoia. And when there is this kind of metanoia, the miracle takes place. And that miracle is always our salvation. Not merely salvation meaning not merely a saving from catastrophe or suffering of the nature which we already know. Supposing the ship is drowning, the ship is sinking, and I can't swim, and the lifeboats have been filled and they are gone. Well, if some very strong skilled swimmer can get hold of me, because I can't swim, he could perhaps take me to shore. Not salvation in that sense, not saving in that sense, but this salvation, which means complete renewal, a creative renewal, a healing, a whole making, something which completely precludes all conflict, all dualism, all duality and multiplicity in a state of unrelatedness. And it is in the depths of consciousness, into the depths of consciousness, that this creative power can enter and bring about salvation. These, I trust, are not mere words. One has to use words in order to communicate. But if you can feel the inner significance which underlies these words, if we can feel that, then we can appreciate just what it is that we have to do in order not to bring about salvation, but not to obstruct salvation, you may use the word grace if you like, or any other word, from functioning freely through us and healing us. We, as we are, cannot tackle that energy which is transcendence. We can never deal unto it. We can never even demand from it. This is one of the mistakes made in petitionary prayer. We can't demand from it. It deals absolutely unto us. what we can do, and this is our duty as human beings, and which we fail to do because we are still not yet fully human. Our duty is to learn, really to learn, how not to obstruct transcendence from functioning. Now, there are certain elements in this connection which we have time and again considered together. But however much we have considered them together, and however much we think, and in some cases merely imagine, that we devote ourselves to living the life, the question still remains, do we really live that kind of life which so purifies us, so cleanses us, that it releases us psychically, psychologically, from the state of suffering and conflict which are present because of our state of ignorance, because of our state of constant self-concernedness. You see, what do we really care for? It's a difficult question to answer. It is not easy to answer. We do not know ourselves. We do not know the ways of the self inside us. Because just as the 9/10 of the iceberg is submerged, 99/100 of the ways of the self are deep down in the subconscious, the subliminal realms. We are unawake and unaware of what is going on in the psychophysical organism, particularly where the psyche is concerned. The physical organism is more or less fairly safe. Nature has seen to that. But the psyche is our special responsibility. This is what has been handed over by evolution, by fate, by God, by nature, say anything you like. It's handed over to us now to do. This is the job we have been given, entrusted to us. And it is a sacred trust. It's a tremendous trust. If we fail, transcendence won't come and pull us out of the mud. Transcendence has no need to do that. The totality has no need to save us. No need for it. The good old dinosaurs flourished 150 million years. They did part of their job. They couldn't do more, they couldn't do the rest. And they faded away, I'd hope, into something rich and strange. So will we. Unless we wake up to the fact that because of this extraordinary this extraordinary something with which we have been entrusted is not seen and understood by us, and we bring it to fruition. We bring it to fruition by not obstructing this transcendent life energy, this creative power because of which the entire universe comes into being and is abstracted back into non-being. We fight shy of these things, saying, oh, that's all very abstruse and abstract and wonderful philosophy, it's all up in the skies. We live here and we've got to do something. Listen carefully. Can you hear that fellow who was the leader of his particular little society saying precisely that 3 million years ago? We've got to do something about it. And what has he done, and what have people done since then? We go from one darkness to another. You know that poet, William Sharp, I think was his name, he had the pseudonym Fiona MacLeod. In one of his writings, he presents Dalua, the god of shadow. And this has been put in a beautiful little operetta by Rutland Boughton, The Immortal Hour it is called. And it opens with this scene in the dark, in the forest, in the night. Dalua, the lord of shadow, speaks, and he says, I have travelled from one darkness to another, and all the spirits who are concerned with the life of nature suddenly burst forth into mocking laughter. You know, that is what we human beings do. Where the real thing is concerned, and this reality, this actuality, is transcendence itself. If we merely build up systems of philosophy in relation to it, through the activity of thought and knowledge, past knowledge, we shall never be living the human life, even for a few magical moments which come to us during our lifetime. But it is this, precisely this, which holds the secret of salvation, of healing, whole making, consciousness. If this consciousness undergoes this transformation, this metanoia, which you can't describe, you can't put it into words, you can't make concepts about it. If it does that, then you will find that our whole life undergoes transformation. So that, what is, let me use an old-fashioned phrase, in the divine scheme, we at least have done our part, and that is fulfillment. Not what we gain out of it in any shape and form. in any shape and form. You might say, well, there have been perfected holy ones through the centuries, and look at the world today. It seems to be much worse than ever. Qualitatively, it's not so much a case of being worse than ever. Study history, see what human beings did in the past. It's really incredible. The change today from that is that these same evils take place on a larger scale, a more frightening scale, a more destructive scale, because we have, through our greed, our intellectual development, which has outrun our moral development, and our passion to exalt ego and satisfy our vanities, we have, as we conceitedly and proudly say, learned to conquer nature, to bend the forces of nature to our will. And our will increasingly becomes a more and more perfect expression of the will of the devil. Let us look back upon some of the points we have considered in the past. We are self-oriented. We try to be unselfish, as we say. But we define unselfishness, and it becomes a struggle between selfishness and unselfishness inside our own psyche. That won't heal it. To will to be unselfish and set up that conflict in the psyche is merely counteracting. It produces other troubles. And it doesn't free us from the bonds of what the world ordinarily knows and calls selfishness. Take any other aspect of our lives, fear, suffering, jealousy, anger, cunning, and the whole host of it. Where is its fundamental root? In our consciousness, in the manner in which we are aware of existence in its totality. This is the trouble. We may be fairly conscious of the manner in which we are aware of ourselves. We may have our lucid moments, but that is quite insufficient. There are 4,000 million other human beings alone, and there are all the other kingdoms of nature on this little planet alone, and there is the totality of the whole cosmos and its process. We don't need to know all that with the brain. We are not intended to be encyclopedias, even divine encyclopedias. But this awareness is this extraordinary sensitivity which characterizes the living psychophysical organism. This sensitivity, which is free and open, it is a receptive, responsive sensitivity, is this extraordinary thing in us, in our constitution, which enables us to be in communion with mind in its fullness, in its totality. Now, mind in the pure sense, the true sense, has nothing to do with what we ordinarily call mind. Apart from the fact that what we ordinarily call mind, the functioning of our brains especially, is the concretest expression of pure mind. Pure mind, constricting its transcendent nature, comes down through the grades of manifestation of energy, the different grades of manifestation, to the state of that which is solid, liquid, gaseous, the concrete. And this is what we here contact and mistake for the transcendent. We always say, my mind. We don't have a bit of mind which we can say is my mind. Just as we make the mistake of saying, my spirit, my soul. That is something universal. You might as well say, oh, this little bit is my space. Label it. Buy it from its owner or creator, or lease it if you like. Draw up a legal document and say, this is my space. You see, it's as absurd as that. Can't be done. But this thing which is the psyche is preoccupied with self. And the psyche is under the dominion of the body, the physical body, something which has evolved through millions of years from a primordial animal ancestor. Hence our self-orientedness. It's an immense power. But we also have this other thing as our great potentiality, the indefinable, the nondescript, indescribable potentiality in us. You call it mind, call it God, call it spirit, use those words that way and recognize that we can't know it with the brain. We can let it function through us. So, we as a group who are deeply concerned, sincerely, honestly concerned, no, I'm not challenging anybody's sincerity, including my own. We are concerned with living the religious life. The religious life meaning that kind of life which enables transcendence to manifest through each one of us in its fullness as man. It is transcendence which realizes manhood through us. We are the caretakers of the temple of the divine, which is the psychophysical organism, Our whole duty consists in keeping it clean, keeping it whole. Seeing that all the doors and windows and walls and roof and floor are completely transparent, utterly open, empty of self and all the obstructive, opaque impediments that the self puts in the way of the transcendent. If you can feel this, if you can really respond to it with this sensitivity which characterizes us, you will experience a tremendous meaning of the void, which is also the plenitude. The limitless void and the conditioned plenitude are all there simultaneously. And then you will realize something which will spell this utter transformation of one's mode of awareness from the self-oriented, sorrowful, conflicting mode in which we live into the transcendent mode, which is our true spiritual freedom. You will realize that it is transcendence meditating which is mind. You will realize that mind is that aspect of the primordial creative power which releases cosmos into being, out of the primordial chaos. Primordial chaos, in its true meaning, being the same creative energy in a state of vibrant quiescence. But vibrant quiescence has no shape, no form. When that changes because of mind at play, it produces a cosmos and at the same time takes in that cosmos back to its primordial condition. This is the best I can do in trying to use words to suggest something which is beyond words and concepts. But if this takes place, even in the slightest measure, then you yourself, because of this transformed consciousness, affect the consciousness of your environment, those around you. You see, all the great advances, the real advances in the human race have taken place coincidentally with this transformation of the mode of awareness of existence. That is why there has been real progress, real development from our primordial animal ancestor to our present stage. Now, if we can really understand this, we will know how to put it into practice. Because this sensitivity puts you into touch, into communion with this creative power. Communion which the brain cannot picture and shouldn't attempt to picture. but it will function naturally and spontaneously through you, the living person. So remember, one doesn't do yoga, one doesn't go through a mystical discipline or some sort of laid down religious discipline or some sort of psychological analysis and all the rest of it, expecting to bring about this sort of result. It will never happen that way. It happens because this principle, which is called grace in the theistic religions, it's also there in Mahayana Buddhism. Theravada doesn't touch upon grace particularly, but it is all there by implication. In every religion you have this. And this transcendent power, which you reverence through your total giving of yourself to it. Total giving of yourself to it. This transcendent power affects, brings about the right results.